From the heart of rural France, this is the Keto Woman podcast, brought to you by me. Hello, keto lovelies. I'm Daisy Brackenhall, and I've spent most of my life struggling with my weight and confidence, and have always had a difficult relationship with food. Even when I finally got to my target weight after weight loss surgery and eating low carb, I couldn't maintain it and I was miserable. I've been keto now for over 2 years and it has given me the freedom to fall in love with food again without the constant gain, loss, guilt, virtue cycle of before. Health and happiness is where it's at now, running on fat. Welcome to the Keto Woman podcast. Each week I'll be chatting to inspirational women, maybe even the odd man, to discover the secrets to their success so that I can share them with you. So what is keto? Keto is a way of eating that enables you to switch your body's main fuel source from sugar to fat. Who doesn't want to be a fat burner, right? But how do we achieve this? A great place to start is by keeping carbs under 20 grams a day. So things like leafy greens and above ground vegetables, plus some nuts and seeds and the incidental carbs you find in things like full fat dairy. Choose delicious fatty proteins and be free and easy with oily dressings on salad and butter on your veggies. Once you're in the swing of things, you can tweak it to suit you. Make your own personalized keto. You'll hear all sorts of ways to keto from my guests. There is no one way to do keto, no one size fits all. I hope to show you just how flexible and fabulous this way of eating can be. I'm not a doctor, and most of my guests won't be either, so we really can't give you medical advice. It's always best to consult your own doctor when making big changes to your diet and lifestyle, because they know you and your medical history, and so have access to the bigger picture. Wouldn't it be helpful to have one place where you could find all the links? Want to sign up to my new Patreon-exclusive Facebook group, Daisy's Lovelies? No problem. How about subscribing to my YouTube channel? Please help me notch up my first 1,000 subscribers by going to links.ketowomanpodcast.com and following the YouTube link. Not following me on Instagram yet? Hit the Instagram button. You get the idea. All the buttons, all the links you need are at links.ketowomanpodcast.com. Welcome to episode number 170 and the second part of my chat with extraordinary man Dan Grief. Owner of Deliciously Guilt-Free, a keto bakery in the UK, Dan wanted to have the same sweet treats but without the massive sugar and insulin spikes, and so makes brownies, blondies and cakes that are less than a few grams of carbs each. He has just been listed by Yahoo Finance as one of their top 10 foodpreneurs. Dan also has an interest in politics, standing for Parliament 3 times, and has a goal to help build the low-carb community as a grassroots movement for change. I promised you cake, and cake you shall have. Well, some chat about cake anyway. More about Dan, of course, and the very interesting life he has led and is leading. His love for politics comes shining through this week, and I think you will agree with me in thinking that this man is going to go far. Who knows? Maybe one day he'll be back on the show as the UK's Prime Minister. One of the first things I'm going to do when I get back to the UK is order one of his selection boxes, and I will share what I think about them with you. I've only tried one flavour so far, and it was a Christmas limited edition, so I thought I would hold fire until I could tell you about things you can get now. That, and I ate them all ages ago. Okay, let's dive in now to the second part of Deliciously Guilt-Free Dan. So I'm interested then in what you've done over your life career-wise. You said you started off thinking you might be going into the priesthood. Sounds like you changed your mind and went towards teaching and did that for a while.
Yeah, I've been busy. I think, you know what, I personally think there's one life, and the worst thing for me would be the thought of coming to the end of it and having regrets and thinking, oh, what if I'd only done X, Y, or Z? And so, okay, you could now say, well, have you done bungee jumping or skydiving? No, I haven't. But maybe that's in the next decade of my life. Who knows? But up to now, the things that I've wanted to try, I've just gone for, really. Mm. And I was very very pious at school, very religious at school. And I thought, you know, I'd like to be a priest. And that was kind of, yeah, the way I used to think about things, really. I used to think, you know, one day that'll be me. And I don't know if what sort of priest I'll be. But I think, you know, it was there in the background from the age of about 11, I suppose. And I was very pious when I was growing up. And then in my 20s, I fell in love with, but I fancied a girl. And to try and impress her at that time, I was working on a document called The Common Good, which is by the English Catholics, bishops. And it was all about how in society there should be a policy the government should have, because I've always been interested in politics as well, which should be for the common good of everybody, regardless of who gets elected, and how policies should reflect that. And do policies reflect any niche interests or actually the whole of society? And I thought it was really interesting. So as a way to try and impress her, as you would, as a little geek that I was, I thought she'd love to know about this document that I was reading and how interesting it was. And I was actually at the time working with an MP as well, voluntarily at the weekends, over this document. And she wasn't interested at all. She wasn't interested in me either. But she said, oh, you'd get on really well with my mum, which is obviously painful to hear as a guy in his early 20s. So I met her mother, as it turns out, who's a reverend who has a charity in India. And she said, oh, would you like to come out and work with me in India? So I said, yeah, that sounds amazing. So I went out there for a few weeks and fell in love with the work I was doing with the street children. Never wanted to be a teacher, but I had some teaching experiences out there. And I thought, oh, this is really good. And then the next year, I decided to save up some money to go back to work there again. And then I traveled to India and Cambodia. And I thought, when I was in Cambodia, that the priests I met there, I thought, these guys live the life. Social justice for me is everything. I think social justice and injustice you see everywhere. And I think, you know, if we try to tackle that, the world would be a better place. So I could see that these guys, the Jesuit order in Cambodia, were just doing some amazing work. So I decided to join them. So I came back to the UK and then I joined the Jesuits. And I did my 18 months, almost 2 years as a novice, but then realized very quickly it wasn't right for me because I wanted to have a family and to get married. And I also realized that actually the piety I had, so much of it was tied up into social justice and actually the ideas of fighting unfairness. And so I decided actually after leaving the training for the priesthood that politics was probably my avenue. And so
interesting. Other ways to do it.
Yeah, exactly. And actually, it's interesting, isn't it? I honestly think that a lot of life is just getting to know who you are and how you function. And the more you understand that and the more you see your limitations as well as your strong points, the more liberating it is, because you suddenly realize, oh, I work in X, Y, Z. I work in this way. I'm better in that situation than that situation. So I used to think, you know, I'll be a miserable priest because I really want to have kids one day. I really want to be a husband. I really want to have a family life. But this is the only life that I can do this social justice work. And then I realized, hang on a minute, in politics, you can do a lot of this as well. And it's different, but it's also very similar. And so I then threw myself into politics.
Yeah, sounds like you've been very good at discovering, finding out, you know, digging down into what really are and were your core identity values. You know, that's what's really important to you, because all that other stuff, actually, how you do it, in a way, that's superficial. It's identifying what those core values are. And then the other things sort of fall away. So you sort of, you know, focusing on the priesthood and thinking that's how it's going to work. But then when you actually realize what the bedrock is, it became clear to you that you could easily accomplish that in a different direction.
I think so.
That actually fulfilled those other things you needed, like family.
Yeah, exactly. And realizing you don't get all those things in just one way in life. Mm. You can get them in different ways. I think there's also a factor of the influence of other people, which is also interesting. So it was interesting when I said to my novice master, my superior, that I want to leave the order. And he was like, well why? It's going so well. And I said, well, I know it is, because I mean, when I was in the order, I got made the kind of prefect type novice. So I was like the person who organized things to the other novices, and I was given lots of roles, which are, you know, really lovely. And I was sent to Palestine to work in a refugee camp and all these great experiences that I just thought, this is amazing. I worked in a homeless shelter in London and I loved working there. And there's all these things that happen that I seem to do well at. And he said, but it's going really well. And I was going to go to Australia the year after. And I said, because I shouldn't stay just for these amazing experiences. And even if I've done well at them, it's not me still. And I know what's going to happen. I'll go to Australia, fall in love with some beautiful woman I just think's amazing, but I can't. And it's not right. It's not true. I've got to be back in Norwich, you know, living a normal life and being true to who I am. And this isn't right for me. And I had an open invitation to return if I wanted to. And when I invited him to my wedding, he said, this might damage a little bit your invitation to return to training again. But I thought, you know what? The pressure from your own parish back home, from, I didn't have any pressure from my family, but if I had had pressure from my family or friends or whatever to stay, I could imagine almost staying in that lifestyle because, well, you're doing okay at it. Mm. You know, it's fun. You're enjoying yourself. It's a great life. Just go with it. But you can't live a life for others in that way. You've got to be true to who you are to be the best self you can be to other people. And I think it's not easy, but, you know, because when I joined the Jesuits, I had to give up my bank account. I gave up all my money. I don't know that I had much anyway. You know, I had one suitcase of clothes and that was it. I had nothing. I gave up everything to go. And when you leave, equally, you've got sod all. So you come back to your parents like, well, that was a good 2 years. What am I going to do now? And I just thought, well, it's best to do that now and do the right choice from my next step than it is to kind of stay in that because it's easier. And I think that takes a bit of courage. But, you know, if you're in the wrong situation, I think you've got to be honest with yourself and realize, how do I tick? Is this actually helping me to grow or is this going to stop me growing and keep me in a place which is not conducive to my happiness?
How fascinating. So is that when you got into politics?
Well, I mean, like I said, try and get girlfriends when I was in my early 20s. I was kind of working on the Catholic Bishop Conference stuff and also volunteering with an MP, a Labour MP. I've always been a Labour person. And I've always been interested in politics anyway. It's just that I tried the priesthood option first. So when I left, that's when I decided, right, I'm going to throw myself into this. And particularly when I moved to Cambridge for a teaching job, I thought, right, what's the best way to get to know people being part of a community? And I joined the Labour Party again. And I just thought, you know, I will meet people who've got similar ideas and values to me. Of course, we fall out, a lot of us, about things at the same time, as you know, that politics is never that straightforward. However, it has been a real community, and coming to Cambridge and getting to know the Labour Party here locally was just, yeah, wonderful for me. And I just decided, right, what am I going to do with my spare time? I'm going to throw it into, politics. And so went to my first meeting and I got asked then, would I stand to be a council candidate? And I was like, beg your pardon, I've just come along for the meeting, actually. And then I did. So I stood for the council that first year in Cambridge. And then about 2 weeks after that meeting, I met my wife in the Labour Party, and she was a campaign manager for one of the wards. So I got selected in that ward, and then she was my campaign manager. And within a year, we were married. And yeah, it all happened very quickly. So I guess I was in an environment where people with like-minded values, and I thought, you know, I just... sounds a bit harsh to say, but I tick with political people. It doesn't matter if you're in a different party. I will tick with you because we've got a similar interest. Even if you've got a different opinion to me, I will get on well with you because I love the discussion. I love the debate. I love the fact you've got a view about this thing that I've got a view about. And even if it's different to me, I love that even more, actually, because you can really get to the heart of what it is. And I just found that connection, a bit like being the Jesuits, you're meeting people who are like-minded, who like the same sort of things that you do about social justice, and you can really get into the issue. And I guess for me, Labour gave me all of those things. And then the next year, I stood for Parliament in 2015, and then in 2017, stood for Parliament, and 2019. In fact, almost to the day, 13th of December it was, last year, I was standing for Parliament again. So it's been kind of a quick succession of things happening, really, from joining the party, getting married, and standing for Parliament 3 times and council 3 times. But yeah, it's been kind of a bit of a exciting roller coaster politically, really. And hopefully one day I'll get elected to something, because I've always stood in pretty hard to win seats. But you know, it's kind of, at the moment, I'm not too keen on rushing into that. I think with my family being quite young, and you know, I've got a small business, and there's a lot of things which take my time up right now, so it's not like I'm in a rush to do those things. But one day I would love to be able to represent people, and you pick that up so readily. You know, you can talk about doing online campaigning or leafleting or whatever you're doing, but there's nothing you can ever replace just having a conversation with somebody on their doorstep. Where you've gone to whatever street it might be, you'll find in the most affluent to the most poor areas, somebody is in need of something that you can probably help them with. And that is like, wow. And I remember, because this is a bit like being a parish priest, and I've always thought this about being a politician. The way I see a politician should be somebody who looks out for everybody in their community, whether it's a constituency or a ward, and they should know who their constituents are. They should actually care about them. They should be signposting different services to help them or directly helping them themselves if they can. And I remember one household I used to go to every year to knock on their door for about 4 or 5 years in a row. And one time the chaplain didn't come to the door. It's on Hartington Avenue in Cambridge. And I remember thinking, oh, but where is he? He's not here this year. And it turned out he passed away. And then I talked to his widow. And I thought, well, I feel like I know these people because I've listened to their stories. I remember actually I got his disabled parking space. I tried to help get that organized outside his house and all these things. Then he passed away and I knew his wife and she was really upset. And I had to call the son to make sure that he could look after her. And I thought, wow, if I hadn't have been there, who else would have heard that? Who else would have been witness to her? Who else would have tried to help her in some way? Because we don't have societies that do that very often. Quite often neighbors don't necessarily know each other. They don't go into that sort of level of depth. And I thought, the things that I left the priesthood because I wanted to get married and whatnot, I can actually still do a lot of those pastoral things in different ways. And that was really fun. And I thought, yeah, this is how politics, I think, should be. You know, knowing that lady's safe and she's fine and she's well, that's actually a good thing to do in the world. And if that's your politics at that local level, then I think politics would be a lot better because it would be focused completely on the community and what their needs are, not necessarily on your own career or on the big national or international platform stuff, but based in the very heart of what democracy is, listening to every single person's opinion. And some politicians in different parties do that better than others. I wouldn't say it's one party's got it and others don't. I think it depends on the individual, but I think that's what a politician should be. Somebody who knows their community, who listens to them and puts their interests first always.
Absolutely. You've just described something I was going to bring up. I just made that leap about, yeah, what a politician should be. I think politicians get a bad rap these days, and in a lot of cases, justifiably so, has to be said. But yeah, you just described exactly what a politician should be. And it was that link, just as you started talking, and I thought, yeah, I can see how connected the two things are. You know, I'm thinking of that, the local parish priest, and I'm not into religion. In fact, I really shy away from it, generally don't like it. But that image of the, you know, the friendly parish priest who, exactly like you say, knows everybody, knows their story, is there basically to serve and to help. And yes, absolutely, that's exactly what the politician should be too. You know, your local MP, that's the role they should be providing and being part of the community. And I think that's one of the things that, with that sort of general shift away, I think, from religion and those kind of, it's the community element that I sort of look on with envy at those things.
Well, this is a thing.
And I know that people end up getting drawn to, you know, I've got a friend who's, doesn't have a religious bone in her body, but has started going to her local church for the community. And that
religion is man-made.
Exactly.
I mean, the thing is, though, you might believe in a God or not believe in a God. And that's a completely different discussion, I'd say.
Completely different thing. Yes, absolutely. I have a lot of respect for faith. It's what happens with religion that muddies the waters and makes it complicated for me.
Actually, if you look at what religion's a reflection of us quite often. Mm. You know, quite often people want rules to live by, or maybe there's been a power game where rules have been enforced upon somebody. That's also very human, unfortunately. But I think the coming together of people, and actually, have you ever read Alain de Botton's book, Religion for Atheists? I think that's right up your street.
I haven't, but yeah, I've seen him. I've seen a lot of his lectures and things. He is fantastic.
He's superb,
I should read that.
Yeah. And actually, when I read his book about 10 years ago, I thought, wow, there's so much stuff in here I think is true. And I think it does relate to what you're doing now, actually, on this podcast. There is an element where you probably think, well, certainly I think this, I want to build and be part of the building of the low carb or keto community. That is a community that I belong to. It's not the only one, but it's a really significant one for me. And I honestly think that people pulling together, and it does tie to my politics, I believe that by the strength of our common endeavor, we achieve far more than we do alone, which I've just quoted from the back of the Labour Party membership card there. But I honestly believe that. I think by pulling together, we can achieve so much more together than we can by pulling apart. And I think the other side of politics as well just relates back to keto as well, is if you see a problem on the doorstep or with your community, which is a bit like a GP, actually, a doctor would see exactly the same thing. You see people getting heavier, you see people getting more and more sick, and people outside the UK might not really understand the NHS, but for most of us, and certainly for me, it's something I'm really, really protective of. And I really, really love the NHS. And I think the National Health Service has given me everything in terms of health, and I want to do everything to protect it. And I see it struggling because of the metabolic health syndrome. And there's also a responsibility in that position to say, this isn't good. And I want to look after my community in that way as well. And I can see there's this sugar coming into their diet or carbohydrate coming into the diet, which actually is incredibly unhealthy for them and is bad for the NHS, and I want to do something about it. And I think you can't help but get angry when you see what the food industry does and how it manipulates people. So I honestly think that, you know, coming together as a community is the best way to fight injustice. It's the best way to support each other and to realize that actually you are quite often the victim of a system. You're not the perpetrator that you're made to feel. And actually, I honestly think that we are made to feel that way quite often. It's our fault for what's gone wrong with regards to our health or whatever else it might be. You know, it's just your character flaw. Instead, I'd rather say, look, there's a problem here. Let's be open about it. Let's support each other. And I think we can do that. The fact that you're in France and I'm in Britain, the fact that people around the world might be listening to this, we are that community standing together. We can make the difference because we can all stand up and say, no, enough's enough. We're going to tell our family. We're going to tell our friends. We're going to try to change the world, making them realize what they've probably been eating for millions of years was the correct way. And this food industry rubbish that's come along, that's the danger. And it's destroying our free healthcare system. Well, not free, we pay for it in our taxes, but it's destroying it because it's like it can't keep up. Mm. And it's an injustice again. So we've got to fight against it.
Absolutely. And I think, yeah, you're absolutely right. There's this real potential groundswell, you know, coming up from the bottom. But it's also so important to have and to support people like you who can be going in and influencing from the top down. You know, we need politicians on our side. We need doctors on our side. These are the kind of people who can make changes, the, you know, the big top down changes that could have a massive impact. You know, you see how these things can swing from one way to another, different. The different things that could be done at a political level, the influence
it's massive
on the whole of the country is potentially massive. I bet you, yeah, you're itching to get your teeth into that.
Well, that is true. And actually, you know, I love somebody like Aseem Malhotra because he is directly influencing policy from the top. You know, he's been talking to Matt Hancock and other people who have influence, and he is directly trying to influence them. And I think that's really important. But actually, good politics is leading the groundswell up. I honestly believe that because, okay, there's been a trend, I'd say, in the last 10 years, probably maybe even longer, whereby there's almost this idea that we are consumers more than we are citizens. And, you know, you hear it on the doorstep sometime, like, what are you going to do for me? Or, you know, it's almost like, well, I'll vote for the best option for my own interest only. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a really bad way of seeing it. And quite often I'll say to people, look, I am a normal person like you are. I'm no different. I've got weaknesses. I've got failings. I've got some strengths. And I just literally throw myself into this because I care about it. What do you care about? What are you doing to fight about it? Mm. That's all it comes down to. Mm. That's literally all it is. And if we all did that, instead of thinking about politicians being in Westminster or in Washington or in Paris or wherever it might be, and that they do stuff to us and we are the victims and we just follow the ebbs and flows of their policy and their legislation decisions, then we're always going to be children. But actually, no, this is our world. This is our planet. We are citizens and we have a responsibility. We must stand up and say, that's wrong and this is right. It doesn't matter what career path or who you are, you've got a bloody voice. Use it. That's what I feel. I get so frustrated when people are like, they're all the same, these politicians. In fact, I've got a really good anecdote about that. Do you know somebody called Alf Dubs? Have you heard of him?
No.
Alf Dubs is a member of the House of Lords, mm-hmm. and he was in the kinder transplant. So he was brought from Czechoslovakia as a child. He's a Jewish, I think, I'm pretty sure he's Jewish, from a Jewish family. He was rescued from the Holocaust. He was brought across to Great Britain through, is it Nicholas Winter, the man who brought all these children across in the Second World War. Mm-hmm. He was then raised in this country. He became a Labour MP in London and then eventually became a member of the House of Lords. He then took on the government to bring refugee children from the jungle, as is described in Calais, this refugee camp,
yeah.
to bring those children across to the UK. He got them to make a commitment. They then went back on the commitment. So I went to the High Court hearing in London with Alf Dubs, Lord Dubs, and others. And this man is probably the most kind of humble, down-to-earth person you could ever meet. I mean, just absolutely inspirational man. And I heard a story in a book that I read once where he was on the doorstep and someone said to him, all you politicians are all the same. And this person was like, that's Alf Dubs who fights for children refugees, who survived the Nazis, who's fought his whole life for children who are refugees. Mm-hmm. And you say he's the same as everyone else? Because in some ways, it's easier to say politicians are all this big block and we hate them. Religion's this big block, we hate it, or whatever it might be. But actually, that's where we kind of do a disservice to ourselves. And we've got to see each other as individuals and try to work out how we can work together for the better. I think if we did that, the world would be a way better place, which which is, I know, a little bit too airy-fairy and dreamlike, but I just think that, you know, if we just work together and try to try and achieve something good, and I think low-carb and keto is a great example of that, you know, if you just tried to make the change in your life and tell somebody else about it, that would be the change to change the world. It really would.
Well, I think we actually underestimate our own influence. I mean, if you think about it, you think, what can I do on my own? And it's all the food production company's fault, and it's the politician's fault, and it's this, that, and the other. Especially when it comes to those foods, all those processed and refined carbohydrates that are bad for us. And they are overly pushed on us by marketing, you know, often very underhand marketing. But actually, if you think about it, it's still a case of supply and demand. If we stop demanding it, they would change their supply.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
If we no longer wanted processed and refined carbohydrates, if we just stopped buying it and said, we don't want that, we want this instead, they'd start making it.
Yep.
So we do actually have the power. And it's very difficult when you're thinking it's just me. What difference am I going to make? And that's where the whole community effort comes in, isn't it? And joining up with like-minded people.
Yep.
Because when you start doing things en masse, you can actually start seeing some change.
Well, I'd say there's two levels to that. And the free market model of demand and supply is really important. So, you know, you can't really be somebody who complains about what happened to Princess Diana if you are somebody buying the magazines and the papers before she died.
That's right.
The paparazzi taking those pictures. So you're actually mm-hmm. funding that. You know, you do in some ways have a responsibility there. But when it comes to this, we have a demand element we are in control of, where we could try to stop buying those things or eating them. But there's also manipulation. And that's the other end. What is it you can do when you know you're being manipulated by the food industry, and there are parts where we are victim to it? What are you actively doing to try to change the manipulation? Maybe you're less powerful over the demand element because you're addicted to the food or whatever it might be. But do you contact, for instance, you know, your local MP and talk to politicians about what they can do? Do you organise in some way a petition or something? Or do you, for instance, support the public health collaboration? Are you part of their programme? Do you listen to their talk? Do you give them money? You know, there are ways you can try to help other people who want to end the manipulation from the top end. And you've got a lot of power in that regard too. So not just as a consumer, you're actually an active citizen in society. And when I used to teach politics to the students, I used to say to them, now you are all politicians in that way, because the democracy that we have belongs to you as much as the Prime Minister. We all are part of the system. So you've got an equal responsibility, as the Prime Minister does, to do your bit, whether that's using the political system, whether that is organising a protest, standing for office, whatever it is, the system is there for change. And it's the most powerful thing on earth for change, because in some countries, you don't get that option at all. So use the system you have. Don't be a victim of it. Think, what can you do to stop things like the food industry manipulating citizens? Because that is your responsibility. And they used to be like, well, wow, I never thought of myself like that. I thought politics is something that's done to me. No, politics is something that you're part of. It's just you're choosing to be part of it more or less. And I think you can choose to buy less food, but actually at the same time, or less of the bad food, but actually the manipulation part, we can actively use the system to fight that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we should. And the more of us do it, the stronger it is. Individually, I can achieve nothing. It's only with people behind me, and the same with all of us, so we can do any change in the world.
That's right. And like you say, get involved with organisations like the PHC. You know, look at what Nina Teicholz is doing in the US. You know, there are other people, like you say, that you can get behind and help with. And your voice does count.
Oh, most certainly does. Most certainly does count. Well, it only counts in unison together.
Mm-hmm.
That's the thing. Your voice is pretty quiet, but put a million people together, it's unbelievably loud. That's how it works, isn't it? It's numbers. And yeah, you know, this sort of individualism of going, oh yeah, but what can I do? Well, no, it's not about what you can do. It's what we can do. It's a mindset change, isn't it? And I think collectivizing is really important. You can get angry or you can get organized. Get organized, you make change. Get angry, you just break your TV and you throw your drink at it or whatever. You know, but get organized. That's what I'd say to people. Do it. Pull together and connect, you know, connect with you, connect with other people doing podcasts, connect with people like Asima Hotra, support them when they go through their hard times. I mean, how many times are our kind of like, you know, low-carb revolutionaries out there fighting and they're getting slated on Twitter or whatever?
Mm.
You know, just reach out and send them a nice message saying, I think you're doing a good job, carry on. You know, whatever it is, you can do a lot to help someone. Little actions all together multiplied have a massive impact. Anyway, we're getting a little bit American Pie now, aren't we? So
I know that's the thing. You can go off on all sorts of tangents and talk about.
We're British. Let's make it a bit more cynical. Like come
on. I want to hear. We are running over time, but I do really want to hear about your business and how this happens with a lot of my guests, that low carb, keto, whichever approach you take, ends up becoming their passion and taking over their life and also their business. So tell us a bit about yours.
Yeah, so it's going to sound really weird, but actually considering what we just talked about, I think it does relate nicely. So the reason I started a business up is because I would like to be a politician one day, an MP. And I thought, well, I know what it's like to teach in different types of schools. So I've taught in special needs schools, secondary, primary. I know what the public sector is like in many ways because my wife is a doctor in the NHS and, you know, my friends and family are NHS workers or teachers or, you know, they tend to work in the public sector. And I really thought I'd want to know what business life is like because it sounds a bit of a weird reason, really. But I thought, you know, I love, for instance, I really love low carb and I love keto and I love that sort of lifestyle. And I really want to know what business is like. So these two things kind of could tie together. Maybe there might be a business there. So that's kind of how it all started. And I didn't know if this business was going to take off or if it was going to be something that was going to be just a bit of a side project and not work out, whatever. But I thought, I want to know what it's like to fill in a tax return. That sounds a bit weird, doesn't it? I want to know what it's like to try to make the books balance, because that's what a lot of life is like for a lot of people. And I wanted to know what that was like myself. And I love to experience it firsthand. So that's why I set it up in the first place. And then a sort of long story short, really, I spent 2 years really kind of baking until about 2 or 3 in the morning. So I make cakes and brownies and things like that. I always kind of thought, you know, I want these things to be something that you could eat without even knowing it's low carb or low sugar. So I want to have an option for people so they can feel like they can just have this and not feel like they're missing out in some way. Because for me, I don't really have a massively sweet tooth, although I think my product's really nice. But I thought for other people, this is really major. And if someone's like type 2 diabetic and they get told they can't have sugar ever again, in their mind, that's synonymous with sweetness. So I think, well, if they could have the option, it doesn't, you know, affect them with their cravings or whatever, and that makes them happy, then they could go for this. And that's what I did, really. So I was baking till early hours of the morning. And then I'd be kind of, I'd do the night feeds and stuff with my son with the express breast milk. And then in the morning, I'd go off and teach during the day. And then I'd sort of, on the way home, I'd sometimes keep orders in the fridge at school and then go and take them to the post office and post them off to our kind of very small customer base. And then, yeah, kind of do that week in, week out, and then sort of politics tutoring in the evenings. So I'd kind of have 3 jobs, really. And I don't know why, I just never gave up, even though it wasn't paying me anything and it was hard work. I just kind of, I could see there's value in what I was doing and people liked it. So I thought, well, that's good enough for me and I enjoyed doing it, so I'll do it. Now, this time last year, I was pretty fed up with politics because we had quite an awful election result for Labour. Mm. It was also pretty awful, way more than that, the existential kind of crisis of Brexit and how I felt about all of that. And I thought, oh, this is too much like hard work. And the business really suffered because I just, you know, you can't stand for Parliament. It's the fourth thing you do on top of all that and nothing else suffer. So it was really, really hard this time last year. And I started applying for jobs and having interviews. And I'm really lucky that I never got any of them because I was going to go to like work in a school full time instead of doing supply work. And I never got any of those interviews. And I was really gutted at the time. But I'm really glad I didn't now because it gave me the time to keep the business growing as it did steadily from January this year. God, it feels like years ago now. But January 2020 does feel like a lifetime ago, right? And so in that time from January 2020 until March, it kind of grew a bit steadily. And then the lockdown happened and then it all took off. And then very quickly I had to give up the supply teaching and the tutoring, and now I've got staff and a premises, and
wow,
and it's just kind of gone. Yeah, we've grown 10 times since March.
Crikey.
Which is
fantastic.
It's basically gone from a side hustle to being able to pay myself a wage and invest in the future of the business. And that is surprising. And the way it happened was we were actually, I remember this so clearly, in March we had one day where we had so many orders come in, and it's because one of our customers was really like rating us and raving about how great we were in a Facebook group. So all these people came along, started buying from us. And suddenly I was like, what's going on? My phone is buzzing with all these sales coming in. I was like, what's happened here? And I suddenly thought, hang on a minute, how on earth are we going to cook all this in our kitchen at home? Because we had the 5-star rating from the council. But I was like, we've got a small oven, a family kitchen. I have to clean it all down after the kids go to bed, make sure it's pristine, then do the baking. You know, I'm not going to sleep for weeks at this rate. This is getting ridiculous. So then we looked into the option of hiring a cafe, which was closed because of lockdown. So we went out to this cafe and they said, we can have it for 2 months. And I remember saying to my wife, this is crazy. 2 months, like, we can't afford the rent here. We're rent free at home. Can't we just carry on at home? She said, no, I think we should go here and use their bigger kitchen. And we had a few kind of temps come in, students who, you know, like couldn't go to university or whatever. And they went at like sixth form, so they were helping us. And we were there for 2 months until July. And then I suddenly realized we can't go back home now because the orders have come in to the point where there's no space for us in this cafe, let alone in my house. Then we went to a soft play because that was closed for a bit longer during the lockdown because, of course, kids can't go to them. So we were there until August. And then by August, this kitchen came up and that's where we moved in September. So it's kind of, it's a weird journey. I never saw this happening, if I'm honest. Like this time last year, I'd have said, I don't know what's going to happen with the business. And now I'm like, well, this time next year, I have no idea still, but I feel like I'll be doing this full time. Well, more than full time. And I love doing it now because, you know, I feel so much more connected to my customer base. I get to know them and hear their stories and they come onto my podcast. And my podcast is very much, I mean, I know yours is probably more about experts and people who are real influencers in the world. I don't know how I got on this, but me too. Whereas my podcast is about stories of just people who are my customers and I want to celebrate their stories and say...
No, that's mine. That was always mine. That was the premise. That's where it started. It's all about, yeah, real, predominantly women, but quote unquote, normal women with extraordinary stories. You know,
yeah, exactly.
That's what it grew out of. Yeah, absolutely.
I think, and saying, you know, like we're all normal people and look what we've done and look what we can do. And I think that's why I did it. And so... I started the podcast around the same time, UK Low Carb, as a way of just celebrating that and saying, you know, let's hear your stories and the community stories. And yeah, it's been really fun. I've really enjoyed it. And I love being part of the community now. And actually, the biggest thing is being able to focus on one thing. So the mindset of being like, right, I was working in a special needs school with some reception children. So the mindset of working with that age group and their needs. So then in the evening, I'd be tutoring like adults in politics because they were like, you know, whatever reason I wanted to study for an A-level or degree or something. So I'd be tutoring them in the evening and then baking at night and then doing the social. And it's the mind change is incredible. It's quite hard. Whereas now I feel like I focus on one thing.
Pulled in too many different directions.
Yeah. And it's really
its
exhausting.
Toll in the end.
It does. Especially like 3-4 hours sleep a night as well. That was a tough few years, but I'm glad I did it. I wouldn't change it for the world. It's been really enjoyable. And I've learned so much as well in that time. You know, you just challenge yourself in different ways and suddenly you're like, you know, like for instance, I hadn't managed anybody until recently this year. And I'm like, oh my goodness, how have I got through life without managing anybody? But as a teacher in a classroom with kids, it's totally different, you know, totally different. And suddenly you've got to realize how you need to manage adults and they can't just read your mind and you have to be clear in your communication. You have to, you know, listen to what they have to say and then take that on board and reflect. And it's not easy. I've learned a lot this year, which... I guess, like I said, the reason I set it up originally was to learn. And I feel like I've done a lot of that this year. Yeah, it's been a good experience in that way. Hard, but really good.
Well, it's wonderful to hear of a business growth story this year, you know, when we're surrounded by hearing the opposite, really. I mean, I know there's been the odd, very, you know, huge business growth story, like, you know, think of companies like Amazon and what have you. But it's fantastic to hear about a small business like yours that's done so well and has really taken off in what's been such a difficult year. Do you think it has COVID had a direct influence on it, do you think? I mean, it obviously had an influence with having the premises available to you and it influenced you that way. But do you think in the more general aspect of it had an influence?
I mean, I hope in a positive way it has, if people are more aware of how dangerous sugar is. I mean, I can only hope, I don't know for a fact. So it's only anecdotal this, but I just think if people are more aware that actually there is a metabolic health problem and the fact that Prime Minister caught COVID and has metabolic syndrome himself. And of course, Dr. Asim Malhotra pointed that out in the press. If that's working towards a sugar-free world, then that could be a great positive from this. I fear that the food industry won't let that happen very easily, so maybe it won't happen, but I think there could be truth in that, certainly.
Although it'd be kind of nice if they jumped on the bandwagon, be happy to share it with them.
That's true. The only problem is, it's market forces, and I quite often find, you know, if you've got an addictive substance that's not legislated against, then they'll keep selling it while people still want it because they're addicted to it. So, you know, it's profitable for them to keep selling stuff that people want to eat. And why they're eating it, I suggest it's because they're addicted to it. So I don't know if they would change. But if they did, that'd be great, obviously. But then there's also the other factor. Somebody said to me, and it's really good, actually, he said, you know, you want to grow a business, but why do you want to grow? And think how big you get. He said, because, for instance, he's known of some businesses that start off being handmade artisan food, and then he sees them over 10 years compromise to get onto the shelf in the supermarket or whatever. The quality goes down.
That's true.
The seed oils go up. Mm-hmm. And before you know it, you've got a food that you didn't set out to make, but it's become the lowest common denominator to sell on a shelf. So, you know, he said, so why are you doing it? Is it because you want to make that change to your customers that you care about? Or is it because you want to sell to more people, but compromise what you do? And I thought, I never thought about that before. So the food industry, I fear, if it did change because of the sugar thing, would still probably have seed oils and other things in it because it's cheaper to produce. Mm. It's also easier to store. I mean, a big problem that we have, it's not a problem at all. I think it's just we do real food, but people who don't do real food can keep something on a shelf for like 6 months to a year without any problems. And I think if it, you know, if it's, is it, I can't remember who said this originally, but if it's there to make the shelf life longer, it's probably there to make your life shorter. Mm. And that's the way I look at it, you know. Mm. And I don't have preservatives on my food. It, you know, it's a 7 day fresh food, keep it in the fridge, otherwise it will go off eventually. And the food industry unfortunately cuts corners because that's a whole system which is set up in that way to do that. It's the most economical way to get food into your mouth for the cheapest price to the producer as possible. So yeah, I think that's why small businesses are doing well, because you can get a much better service. It's much more caring. People, I know my customers, they know me as well. And they also know this is food that I would only eat myself and my for my family. In fact, that's how it all came about, because it's food that we wanted to eat because we were giving up carbohydrate. And so we're happy to eat it ourselves. So if we'll eat it, then hopefully you'll find it nice as well. And I think there is that. There's a something with the low carb community, which is very much based in small business and little groups of people who all know each other. I think that's really lovely.
That's right. I've noticed that from going to some of the low carb conferences, especially ones where they've got the stands where they're sharing some of their food and you get to talk to them. And yeah, it's lovely to hear about them, and you can just feel the passion they have for their own products because it's all wrapped up in their own personal life as well. And there's nothing to say that these, you were talking about, yeah, how big do you want to get? But it's not to say that it has to stay really small. Yeah, you're not talking about having them on every supermarket shelf, but as you've shown over just a few months, you can ramp up production to still be getting a lot of that product out to a lot more people.
Yeah, as long as, like you say, you don't give up on your values, that's what it comes down to.
That's right.
And also, we've got complete control over everything we do because we produce it ourselves. You know, some manufacturers, I mean, the stuff I've learned about the food industry from doing this is quite incredible. Some people say, I want to make this product. They'll go to a factory and they'll say, make this for me. Now, of course, you can still have your values maintained. Of course you can. But I would be worried that perhaps there's a chance that they might start slipping the value down to make the production cheaper for them. So, you know, we have complete control about what we make. We make it all ourselves, fresh. You know, people say to us, like, I ordered now, I expect it to be sent out straight away. It's like, well, your stuff's not baked yet. You know, it's all freshly baked for you. So
that's,
you know,
a good thing.
We generally get out within 24 hours because we're pretty quick. But even then, it's going to take a bit of time just because everything is fresh. You don't want it sat on a shelf for weeks. Then you suddenly turn up and we're like, send it out quickly. You know, it's all baked fresh. So, you know, we've got complete control over that. And no matter how big we get, I think, you know, I read a really good book about business and it said, you know, try to grow to the point which is a natural point for your business and your community of customers. And just try to get to that point where it seems to be the sweet spot where you're not overworked, but you're living out of this business. You're not rich, but you're doing okay and you've got a nice lifestyle. And effectively, your hobby, which is what this business was in the first place, becomes your life and you just love doing it. And that's what I think we're getting to. And it's, and it does worry me a little bit thinking, well, we've grown in a pandemic. Will that all suddenly reverse and, you know, the vaccine comes about and it's the light at the end of the tunnel and suddenly everyone goes back to their old ways? And you just hope, well, I don't think that will happen, but I've got to try to invest a bit more now to make sure it doesn't happen by really nurturing the customer base and, you know, and growing this thing with them so it's what they want it to be. And then, you know, and then that will make it much more sustainable in the future.
Yeah, I don't think so. I think...
Thank God. If you'd said, yeah, you should be worried, mate. If I was you, oh dear, I'd turn back to religion pretty quick.
Well, I'm afraid for those people listening in the States, you're not going to be able to send them to them. But
we used to.
Where can Brits find you?
We used to.
Did you?
Up until February, March time this year, we used to send the stuff to America. We used to have some subscribers over there. So every other week, we'd be sending stuff to America. And
oh, crikey.
It was getting there quicker than it was in the UK.
Oh, dear.
Yeah, which is a bit shocking. Good. But since the pandemic's hit, we've had to stop that because, you know, stuff is going missing in the UK, left, right and centre. The Royal Mail was completely on its knees at pretty much, well, I'll say one point for a few months at a time, pretty much. Yeah, so we've just concentrated on the UK now, and actually that's growing really well for us. But yeah, I'd certainly like to have, you know, to maybe open up one of these in America one day. It'd be amazing. Right, this is, see if you make this come true for me, Daisy, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Basically, what I want to do, I want to be in the low-carb community. I want to be making things like podcasts, and which for me is an excuse to talk to my friends like you and talk about things that I love, like low-carb, to kind of influence the way that governments are doing things, and at the same time have a cafe or somewhere selling nice cake. You can have a coffee and chat about stuff. That's all I want. Is that too much to ask?
No, it's fine. You just want to do everything. That's fine.
Yeah, exactly. I just want to do everything at once. But you know what? I think if this was in America as well, it'd be great to have a place where people could meet, where they could have regular talks about things, or just, you know, like the Keto Fest on a regular basis.
Oh, it'd be wonderful to have a keto cafe. Yeah. When you first said the first premises you went into was a cafe, I was thinking, well, you know, once everyone can get together again, that would be a lovely venue with you baking the cakes in the kitchen,
yeah,
and then lovely coffee and cake out the front. Perfect combination.
So a few years ago, I said to my wife, you know, I want to have a socialist cafe. And she said, it's a disaster. It will never work. What are you talking about? I said, but it could be a place where political people
come
together.
Is that where you can go
together
and pet a socialist? Like, yeah, one of those cat cafes.
I don't think it'd do so well in America, would it? But in Europe, maybe more so. And, you know, you could have like talks and live music and people who are similar minded coming together. But I now think, make it keto. In fact, there is a keto cafe in London now, and I've been to it. They're great people, Ian and Lisa, who run it. And I think, yeah, they should be open again now, if not already, after the most recent lockdown. But I think there should be more of them, and we should get together more often. And I mean, I feel sorry for them. They opened up in February, and of course, very soon after that, the pandemic hit. So, you know, it's only in its infancy. But I think those places are really important, and we should have meeting points where we could all get to know each other. And, you know, that is, I guess in many ways, ties back to my religious thing. You know, it's pulling people together again and saying, what can we do together? And if we know each other, I mean, if you look at like diabetes.co.uk, what an amazing community and forum that is.
That's
and
right.
They really, you know, they meet up people on that forum and they know each other. And what an amazing thing for good that has been. So I think we should have more of that. I think the next 10 years, we'll hopefully see that growth as well.
And how better to do it than over cake?
There you go.
I mean, you know, try and sell me religion I'm not so interested in, but if you tell me there's cake there, I'm in.
What about if I had a bit of Latin I spoke at you? Would that appeal to you more? Sanctus Dominus? No?
Yeah, why not? As long as there's cake, I mean.
As long as there's cake, yeah, yeah. Let them eat cake, yeah. Actually, that's the tagline I'm thinking about. You could actually say, have your cake and eat it.
Mm.
You know, I think that would work, wouldn't it? Because you're having your cake, but it's got less than 2 grams net carbs in each cake, so it's kind of tiny amounts, so you can have your cake and eat it. Yeah,
absolutely. So, well, I started asking you and then we ended up going off on a long ramble answer. We haven't actually got the answer yet. Where can
that's
people
what politicians
find you?
Do so
yes, but you need to answer this one.
Well, you wouldn't expect me to answer a yes no answer to anything. I'd like to talk around the houses for 10 minutes or so. Oh, the sun's coming up. It's tomorrow morning. Yeah, so we're Deliciously Guilt Free, and the website is deliciouslyguiltfree.com. And equally, you can find on social media just Deliciously Guilt Free. I think it is for Instagram and Twitter and whatnot and Facebook. There's also Deliciously Guilt Free Chat, which is a great Facebook group. You're more than welcome to come along and join in the conversation. And then the podcast is UK Low Carb. And that's where I get a chance to really let off steam and talk about these issues a bit more. Because, you know, not everyone who likes keto cake is really into the politics of change and keto. So, you know, so I like the UK Low Carb to talk about the stories and these issues with like yourself. And if you want to talk about the cake and the nutrition and macros, then, you know, you've got Deliciously Guilt Free Chat. So that's where that is.
Fantastic. Thank you. And it sounds like once all the postal systems everywhere are back up on their feet and working properly, that you can get them out past the UK.
I wish. Let's go back to Brexit again. Come the 1st of January, I don't know what's going to happen. I mean, I say that because, of course, the Prime Minister doesn't know. The news at the moment seems to be that things are faltering somewhat. Maybe when this comes out, things will be all sorted. But
yes, well, last thing I saw him saying that we all had to prepare ourselves for a no-deal Brexit.
Which, yeah, so maybe.
But then I think we've all been preparing ourselves for that while anyway with him in charge. So
yeah. Let's not get too political, but yes, you're right. And so in terms of shipping to other parts of the world, I'm going to give it a few months and see just what happens first. Let's survive the rapture and then we'll go from there.
Fantastic. Well, I can't wait to try them. Looking forward to it a lot.
You've got some winging your way to you now, actually, haven't you? Just getting through the French postal system
very,
at some point.
Very, very excited.
Yeah. Cool. Well, I hope you enjoy them and let me know what you think.
I will. Well, we've gone well over time and we've Well, we've chatted about all sorts of things and I've enjoyed it very much. But we wrap up in customary fashion with a top tip, please.
Yes, my top tip that I've learned from my own experience and other people's is, it's going to sound really like American Pie again, but you're only human, so just do not beat yourself up. This is what I learned from Gentlemen, and I completely agree to this. Your willpower will fatigue after a while, so make your environment the best it can be for you. And if you know there's a problem with something, just chuck it away or give it to somebody else straight away. Don't even have it around tempting you. And know that even if you do make a slip, I mean, that's all judgmental language. I just shouldn't say it like that. But if you do something we think is not an optimal choice, learn from it, adapt your environment or whatever you can to make it easy for yourself. Don't beat yourself up and then try again. And I think in life, so much of it is like that, because I saw a really good cartoon once where it was somebody on a bicycle and it said, you know, like having carbs at the weekend only is like doing this on a bicycle. And they took a stick and put it in the wheel. Mm-hmm. You know, it stops you there and then, but actually the impact of the accident will affect you for a week or two afterwards. And that's exactly what I find. So try to get to the point where you're not putting the stick in the wheel, whatever it is. Try and make it as easy as possible for yourself. You know, love yourself by looking after yourself, and look after yourself by changing your environment and making it more conducive to the choices that you want to make. So you don't have to even make those choices. It just happens because you've engineered your environment in that way. And I think that's what I think.
That's right. Make it a bit more easy for yourself.
Yeah, completely. I mean, for instance, you know, we've brought out Christmas flavors, not because I think that's what people want necessarily, it's because that's what I want. And so I'm going to make sure I'm not going to have Christmas pudding this year, because I've made my own low carb version of it, which I'm going to eat for me and my family. So, you know, I've engineered my environment to make it easier for me. And if I, you know, if I was at home without that Christmas pudding and there's one in the fridge, well, I'm very likely going to eat it. So don't have it in the fridge, get rid of it. You know, whatever you can do to make it as easy as possible for yourself, that's what you should do. Because we're all human. We're animals at the end of the day. We're tempted by things. We have urges for things, whatever. It's very natural. So try to give yourself a break and make it as easy as you can for yourself. Oh, whoops. Sorry, my speaker just fell off there. poignant point there. Ended
Press
by...
bang wallop.
Ended by about a bit of slapstick. Anyway.
No, I think that's absolutely right. And I was thinking about something you were saying about earlier by being triggered a bit by Christmas and the different foods that are your favorite, and how sometimes how some people are in an environment where they can't not be surrounded by some of those foods. So that's where, you know, tasty products like yours come in that they can take along with them so that they have got something when everyone else is eating. So say it's the Christmas pudding, everyone else is eating that and that used to be their favorite. Well, if they've got their Christmas pudding flavor cake on that they can have on their plate, then they're not going to feel so left out and they're not going to feel like they're deprived in any way. So, you know.
And also we get told this all the time. They have one of our brownies or cakes and they feel so full because it's made out of nuts and, you know, really rich, nutritious food, whereas, you know, light floury things you could have lots of and still feel like you need more of. So they're also, you know, that's another thing. It's there to help you, hopefully, to realize you're not missing out. You're having something that tastes just like the real thing, but it's not as bad for you, and equally not going to desire and have the cravings afterwards. And that's kind of the key, isn't it? Obviously it depends on what, you know, your cravings are, but I think that's what we get from most of our customers, which is lovely to hear, actually, that people feel, again, I keep saying this word, but liberated. And that's really important. They've, you know, they've changed their environment so they feel liberated from being addicted to the carbs so much. So that's, you know, it's all good.
Yes, because no one actually enjoys being a slave to these foods, yeah, do they? I no. Certainly never used to.
Exactly. You know, or slave to smoking or alcohol or whatever it might be. Mm. You know, you are a prisoner in addiction. And I think that's what a lot of us feel with food. I certainly know I do.
That's right. Well, Dan, it's been a great pleasure. I've really, really enjoyed talking to you today. Thank you very much.
It's been great. Thank you for having me on. I've loved being an odd man. Well, sharing my oddness of the world. So thank you for that. I was listening to the show for years, so it's lovely to be here.
Oh, thank you. That's nice to hear too. It sounds like you've got a lot more to share, so we'll have to get you back again sometime.
I'm sure I can talk about something, yeah. Thank you, Daisy, and have a lovely Christmas.
Yes, you too.
Bye now.
To get the resources and links from this show, please go to ketowomanpodcast.com/episodes. Please share this podcast with as many people as possible by sharing one of my links or just taking a screenshot of an episode that you enjoyed. Reviews really help raise the profile of the podcast, which gets it in front of more people, but also helps me attract a wide variety of guests. So please take a minute to leave a review on whichever podcast app or platform you like to listen on. It doesn't go unnoticed by me, the people who regularly like, share, and comment on my posts. Your support really does mean the world to me. Thank you. Are you enjoying this podcast? Help me make more episodes and videos by making a pledge at my Patreon page, patreon.com/ketowoman, or simply hit the support button on the Keto Woman podcast website. Don't forget to join in the fun on the Keto Woman podcast Instagram and Facebook pages, and Daisy_KetoWoman on Twitter. Are you my next extraordinary woman? Maybe you've got an idea for a show, a topic you would like to hear about. Let me know how I can tickle your earbuds by dropping me a line at daisy@ketowomanpodcast.com. Many of you will have seen her steal the show at the inauguration this week and have been moved by her like I was. So who better to provide our end quote this week than Amanda Gorman? There is always light, if only we're brave enough to see it. If only we're brave enough to be it. Bye-bye, keto lovers.